Good. Everyone's used to the system by now of how to download it, I hope. Okay. We are still dealing with David and Yehonatan, and I want to complete that and then start looking at David and Shaul. So there's an awful lot that we need to cover. Last time, we're in Perek Yud-Chet, chapter 18. We read through the opening five psukim, those opening five sentences, which mix the conversation between David and Shaul after he has killed Goliath, when he shows up with the head. We mix that with, hang on, I'm just letting more people in. We mix that with Yehonatan meeting David, nafsho k'shura b'nafsho, their souls are tied together. And Yehonatan gives David his armor and his weapons and all of that. So last time we started the conversation about this by discussing the fact that we blend the Yehonatan David bond with Shaul's encounter with David, and we offered some suggestions, whether it's because they're tied together in terms of when they take place, or whether it was a literary move to show Yehonatan getting in the way of Shaul's animosity for David, whether there's a contrast between Shaul's response to David and Yehonatan's response to David. But David and Yehonatan, their souls are tied together. There is a deep bond, which the commentators seem to be getting. I see you, Susan. The commentators seem to be getting this from the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, which places the relationship between David and Yehonatan as the model of a love that is entirely sincere. It's not about what one gets from the other. It's more admiration of positive traits that you admire, you seeing them in this other person and admiring it, and that leading to a bond. Yes, Susan.
I just sort of noticed too. It hit me. Both Shaul and Yehonatan took off their, well, in Shaul's case,
we're getting there. Yeah. We're getting there.
Okay.
You're ahead of us.
Hit me. Hey, that's important.
Yes. Yes, it is. We are definitely going there. But before we get to the brit in Pasuk Gimel and the granting of the clothing and the armor in Pasuk Dalet, I still want to just talk more about this relationship. If you look at the language in the psukim, the language in the text, and this is something that we've already started to talk about, it says that Yehonatan loves David. It does not present reciprocation. Right? I'm just going to mute everybody by default because I'm here in background. Hang on. The expression that's used is the soul of Yehonatan is tied to the soul of David. Yehonatan loves David like his own life. It's Yehonatan towards David, and it isn't stated in the reciprocal. So we already discussed in the beginning of the chapter when we talked about the descriptions of David's love, we quoted Susan Ackerman with the idea that in Tanakh in general, love is presented as X loves Y, without presenting the other direction that Y loves X. The language isn't presented in a two-directional way, even though the relationship is. Instead, it's the dominant one is expressed as loving the one who is not dominant, and in this case, Yehonatan, son of the king, is the dominant one in this relationship. So that's certainly one way to look at it. On the other hand, please take a look at source number one. The Midrash from Shir HaShirim Rabbah, commenting on a sentence in Shir HaShirim, in Song of Songs, Ki Aza Kamavet Ahava. You see that? Love is as powerful as death. So on that, the Midrash says, Ahava She'ahav Yehonatan LeDavid. Yehonatan's love for David, that's what it's referring to, is the love that is as strong as death. But notice, it's the love that Yehonatan has for David. The wording is Yehonatan's love for David. So that seems to support it. In fact, I see you, Ruth, hang on. The text will not have David use the term Ahav for Yehonatan until his eulogy for Yehonatan in the beginning of Shmuel Bet. So you do have reason to say maybe the love isn't there. Ruth, I saw your hand. I'm just going to finish this point because there are a couple of things I want to note on this, and then I'll come to you. An article that I found online from Megadim, that journal that I keep referring to, from Rabbi Yosef Yigal Didi, who is a Rav and an educator in Israel with a specialty in Tanakh, he makes the argument that David evolves in his relationship with Yehonatan. And we're going to come back to this as we follow the relationship in the coming chapters. We're not really ready for most of the for most of what he has to say. But take a look at source number two, the piece that I bring you here. He's referring to events that occur in chapter 20, when Yehonatan determines that his father wants to kill David, and he sends David away. In his understanding, I should explain, David is not able to leave until Yehonatan sends him. And that's something we need to talk more about. But take a look now at source number two. He says, "La'achar shemitbarer liYehonatan, she'achein Shaul aviv rotze laharog et David." Once it becomes clear to Yehonatan that his father wants to kill David, "Hu yotze la'sadeh u'msamein leDavid shalav livramach," he signals David that he has to flee. And that I gave you the reference in the psukim. It's in the end of chapter 20. David magdil lifkod yoter mi Yehonatan. At that point, David and Yehonatan embrace, and David cries more than Yehonatan does at that point. Lamrod shebak tuvim ra'inu Yehonatan hu zeh she'ahavet David kenafsho. Even though we've seen that the text says Yehonatan is the one who loves David, David is crying more than Yehonatan. So why is he crying more if Yehonatan is the one who loves him more? David mevin ata ad kama Yehonatan ohevoto. Because at this point, David grasps how far Yehonatan is ready to go in order to help him. He understands the love that Yehonatan has for him. Yehonatan ma'afsher lo lalechet. Yehonatan enables David to leave. He permits him to leave, frankly. Lamrod shu yodea shu ye'abed or yovad et meluchato b'shel kach. Even though he knows that once David flees, David survives, that means he's not getting the throne. He's losing the throne as a result of this. That's what Yehonatan is sacrificing. So yoter mishiko evet leDavid hapirda, hu ko'evet ha'uvda shehu lo batach ba'adam hayachid she'ahav oto ahava amitit kenafsho. Even more than David is pained at leaving Yehonatan, he's pained that he had not earlier trusted this person who was willing to give up everything for him, the one who truly loved him as himself. So there's a lot to be said about this. My internet connection isn't great. I'm getting a message about that. I'm doing the best I can with it, but I have three children on school Zooms at the same time as we're doing this. Hang on, Ricky. I see you. And I see you, Susan. And I still have to come back to Ruth. But I want to make sure that what we're saying here is clear. This is something that we're still building. This idea that Rav Didi is expressing is one we haven't seen a lot of the evidence for yet. So I'm presenting you an idea in part that still has to be fleshed out. But what I want to get across here is he suggests that at this stage, it's not there. It's something that David is going to embrace more as our story evolves. And last point on this, and then I'm going to come back to all the questions, not to worry. The Mishnah that we mentioned in Pirkei Avot that speaks of the selflessness of David and Yehonatan, the selflessness of their love, it's not tluya b'davar, it's not dependent on any benefit and all of that, should not necessarily be understood as saying that both of them have that same connection to each other. First of all, that Mishnah also mentioned the love of Amnon and Tamar, right, in its contrast. Tamar has nothing for Amnon. That's number one. For those who don't know the story yet, be happy. We'll get there eventually, unfortunately. That's number one. But number two, and Rabbi Chaim Angel points this out, the selflessness of Yehonatan is the fact that he's willing to give the throne to David. David does not have any reciprocal action. there's nothing that David can give to Yehonatan. So it's not even like he has the opportunity to demonstrate that kind of affection. It's not there. Okay, there were a lot of questions, a lot of comments. So I'm going to go in the order that I saw them, and that means it's going to be Ruth, it's going to be Ricky, it's going to be Susan and Etty, and then after that we can go beyond. But that's who I saw so far. Ruth C. Whose translation is that?
This is the Art Scroll.
Okay. So what the Art Scroll is doing is it's wrestling with a problem that we noted last week, but we have to come back to this week, which is that the language is singular in the text. It says, right. Yehonatan and David made a brit, but the verb that's used by Yichrot is in the singular. And then it says, Be'ahavato oto kenafsho, for he loved him like himself. So they're reading it as a plural, but that's not in the literal text. And again, we're going to come back to that. Janine, don't worry. We're getting there. I know this is something you're watching also.
In my tonight, it's got here in brackets by Yehokovehu.
No, what you're looking at there is from sentence one, where there was a kriuktiv. It's written Vayehaveyu without the hay, and the tree is to put in the hay.
Okay.
That's a different thing. Yeah. Okay. Susan.
No, me.
No, Ricky, you're after Susan. Susan says no. Okay, go on to Ricky.
Thank you. Yes, why does this Farsha assume that Yonatan would assume that he would take the throne? I mean, there was no indication that it's going to be...
So we're going to get there. We're going to get there. We already noted last week that later on, Yonatan says explicitly to David, I know and my father knows that you're going to be king. He actually says it to him later. But many of the commentators assume that that's already evident to him. We did mention it last week, but we're going to come back to it in any case this week. So hang in there, and what goes, you know, what came around once will come around again.
No, but in this and Rabbi Yosef Higal,
yeah,
he just needs that Yonatan assumes that he's going to get the throne, and that is why blah blah blah.
Yes, yeah, because again, by the time we get there, we will see that Yehonatan knows that David is going to be king. Meaning,
does Rabbi Yosef Higal know that he knows?
Because he read it. That's what I'm telling you. It's in the text. All right, go take a look at chapter 20. He's commenting on a verse at the end of chapter 20. Okay? He's commenting on a verse at the end of chapter 20. You saw that in the 40s there? All right, you'll go look at the end of chapter 20, but look at chapter 20, sentences 14 to 17, and then look at their interactions in chapter 23, and we'll see it there. We're going to be coming back to this. We're not done with it, but the answer is Rabbi Didi knows it because he's been reading the story, and he's commenting on something that's still to come. 23:17 is going to be the most explicit statement of it, but many of the commentators recognize that this is already here now. You'll see Shaul say it also. Yes. The answer is that he's making the assumption with reason. That's what I'm trying to say. Etty.
No, I'm before Etty.
Sorry, Susan. Etty.
No, I was before Etty.
Seriously?
I was after Ricky, and then Etty.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, 2 points. One, Dave, when you're saying David's crying, how do we know he's not crying just because he found out that Shaul wants to kill him so badly? That's a big blow.
So I'll tell you what. When we get to that in chapter 20, we will discuss chapter 20. I have enough challenges in getting through chapter 18.
Okay.
Thanks.
And the other one is just from the, we're assuming a character quality of Yonatan's. I mean, he knows that Dudley's going to be a king. That's not what I'm saying. Maybe he's like Prince Harry. He doesn't, how do we know he wants the throne? There's a difference between it being his right to have the throne, but there's nowhere that says, and we've seen it, they say he's modest and he's all these things. Maybe the throne was not something he wanted.
Right. So I hear what you're saying, and here I will take a moment to discuss how theories work. They, generally speaking, in any area where we need to try to understand what is happening, we have data, and we try to come up with a theory that suits the data. And that's not just about Tanakh, that's about science, that's life, that's the way things work. So-and-so did such-and-such, why did that person do it? What's my data? I come up with a theory that fits the data. They, generally speaking, a human being can look at a set of data and come up with more than one theory. You can go with lots of explanations for why so-and-so did whatever it was. How do you know which theory is right? So some people will take the theory that suits their worldview, right? It's, I like this theory because it fits the way I look at the world. However, it's really better, I think, from an objective standpoint, to try to find the theory that best fits the data. I can look at Yehonatan, applying this here, I can look at Yehonatan embracing David, recognizing David is getting the throne, and saying, you're number one, and I'll be happy just to be your second in command. And I can look at it and say, guess he doesn't want the throne. That's one theory. Or I can look at it as, he loves David. He is so impressed with David. Which one has the data on its side? The data is, I love David, I'm giving David everything, and it's not just Yonatan saying so, it's the narrator of the text describing it that way. That supports the idea that it's his reaction to David because of who David is. I never see Yonatan do anything that indicates not liking the throne, just the opposite. My first introduction to Yehonatan was him going out and killing a Plishti unasked, and then my second encounter with it was him rallying his guy to go fight them, and then my third encounter with him is the nation rallying to support him after he ate, not knowing about Shaul's oath. Everything I've seen about him so far has been somebody who's a leader and out front. I don't
see him as a warrior, not necessarily as a king. It's like you want to be a war. I'm not saying this is the way it is, but to me, the data also shows he loves being a warrior. He does, and he wants to succeed as a warrior. He likes the people liking him, but governing, even ask the people to help him anywhere. He didn't govern them anywhere.
Right.
I
hear you, but I would note that warrior and leader go together in Tanakh. You know, if you think back through the Shoftim, it's certainly so. But even the fact that his act of recognizing David as king entails giving him his armor and his weapons. If he wants to be a warrior, that's not a healthy move. I don't see the evidence to support it. It's a creative idea. I just don't see the evidence to support it. And I do see the evidence as the text repeats, you know, and not just here, but in the chapters to come, that he loves David. Okay. Others before we move into Pasuk Gimel. Oh, there's Eti. Right, Eti. Forgot about you. Go ahead.
I was with Ricky in that thing. Yonatan does not know that David is going to be king, neither does Shaul. Only David's family know at this point. And I believe that the number two explanation that you gave is in the wrong place, because we're still talking about him just loving him and giving him his armor, not where later on when he's telling him to run away.
No, I'm bringing that only to show you the idea that David's love is not there for Yonatan now, but that it will be later on. That's why I'm bringing you source number two, is just to show the idea that maybe it's not, in other words, my question is, does David love Yehonatan? And my answer is, on the one hand, I can bring you texts that show he doesn't. It's not stated that he loves him. On the other hand, you have a suggestion that maybe it's something that grows and evolves over time, separate from the question of when Jehonatan figures out that David is going to be the king. On the question of when he knows, we've already seen some evidence in the discussions that we had at the end of chapter 16, and the end of chapter 17, about why Shaul asks about David's lineage. We already had some evidence there, and we're going to see more. This is not a dead topic. This is one we're going to come back to. Yes, Ruth?
Why should we even expect David to, at this stage, to love Jonathan? Because he barely knows him. Jonathan has seen the way David acted. But David hasn't seen anything really about
I'm not
Jonathan.
Sure that's true. Jonathan is a national figure, meaning there was a point where we said there were only two people who had weapons. One was Shaul, one was Jonathan. Everybody was a fan of Jonathan after that initial battle with the Plishtim, where Jonathan was the one who rallied them, and they said to Shaul, "Don't you dare touch him. We love Jonathan." I'm not so sure that he doesn't know anything about him.
We haven't had any interaction.
That's true. That's true. I don't think that's dispositive, but that's true. Okay, let's get moving here. The Pasuk Gimel, in sentence 3, we find this brit, this covenant, that someone makes with someone, and it sure looks like Jehonatan with David, as opposed to in reverse. So the first thing I want you to know is this is not the only time we mention a covenant between David and Jehonatan. Jump to chapter 20, sentence 8, please. If you have the sheet in front of you, look at source number 3, because I gave you the two references right there in source number 3. So you want to see chapter 20, sentence 8, in which David says to Jehonatan, in requesting help from him, Ve'asita chesed al avdecha. Do chesed for your servant. And notice the term al, right? Do chesed upon your servant, right? Suggesting that Jehonatan is the dominant figure, which is, again, what we've been saying. And he says, Ki bebrit Hashem heveta et avdecha imach. Because in a covenant of God, you brought your servant with you. So who does it sound like is the creator of this covenant? Based on that sentence?
Jehonatan,
right? It's very clear. David says, Jehonatan, you protect me because you brought me into a covenant with you. So Ruth, your art scroll can say whatever it wants, trying to make the language, plural. But David doesn't agree. David says, Jehonatan was the one who created the covenant with me, and now I ask you to jump ahead to chapter 23, sentence 18, which will refer to a new covenant for them. This is the last meeting of David and Jehonatan. And we're told they make a new covenant, Vayichritu Shnehem Brit Lifnei Hashem. The two of them made a covenant before God, and notice the language. It is, Jeanette's smiling, she sees it.
Shneihem.
It's plural.
This time it's both of them.
Right. Now it's plural. It was not plural before. It's plural now. I think that supports the idea of the evolving relationship between the two of them. But now let's go back and ask a question. What exactly is the Brit? So they made a brit, or Jehonatan made a brit, and told David, guess what, we have a brit. But what exactly is it? It's a covenant to do what? Well, based on what we saw in chapter 20, sentence 8, we know. Hannah?
No, I want to say, it's about the offspring, because David protects Mephibosheth.
So there will be a relationship in terms of their offspring, that's true, but right now it's just a statement of protection. Right now it's immediate protection. Eventually we will find it applied to their descendants, you're right.
Could that also be making some decisions together about the future and that, like I will be your prime minister and you will be the...
So that's something...
And we will work together.
We will find that discussed in chapter 23. We don't see that at this stage. And certainly not among those who think that, that Yonatan doesn't know that David's gonna be king. But this is a Brit of protection. Take a look at Malbim in source number 4. He says there are different kinds of covenants. V'sibat ha-brit lo haya mitzad eze yir'ah. Kiderech korte brit shesibatamu eze mora bal yir'u zel azeo livnehem. He says this covenant was not the type of covenant that you see in which it's motivated by fear, and two parties say, we're going to have a pact of non-aggression. Right? If you think of Yaakov and Lavan. Right? You don't do anything to me. I don't do anything to you. We go our separate ways. Oh, he gives you examples. Kamo Brit Avimelech im Avraham vi Yitzchak uchadome. Right? Like the Brit that Avimelech makes with Avraham, and then we find with Yitzchak as well. Rak mitzad ahavato karat habrit hazot. It is a love-based act of saying, Yehonatan says, I'm going to protect you, David. That's what it is. Ralbag is different. And this is going to antagonize Eti and Ruth, but that's okay. You know, the updated version of Zoom, for those of you who have upgraded, allows you to move the boxes around the screen. You know that? If you have the updated version, you can actually move the boxes on your screen. So I am moving Eti and Ruth onto one side.
On the top right-hand side, you can see three little dots.
No, no, not that.
One of the options is
Ricky.
End of video.
Right, no, not that. Something different.
I know, but I'm adding that.
Okay.
You can all focus on one person.
I don't know. I upgraded and it's not working.
So what? If you move the mouse over the boxes, it should turn into a hand if you're able to do it.
It doesn't.
All right.
I did upgrade.
Okay.
I was not offered the upgrade. I looked for it.
Actually. Sorry. All right. Later on, I can do tech support. But the point here is not that. The point is to say that I know that there are people who are not going to accept the idea that Yonatan knows right now. Ralbag thinks Yonatan knows right now. Take a look at source number 5. Ralbag says, V'yidme, it appears, Shekarat Yonatan brit im David, ki ra'ah hayoto melech al Yisrael bir'oto tuv hatzlachato. He sees David becoming king over Israel because he says, wow, this guy is good. And that's why, in chapter 23, Yehonatan is going to say to David, Yadati ki malach timloch al Yisrael. I know you're going to reign over Israel. V'kama b'yadcha mamlechet Yisrael, and the throne of Israel is going to be in your hands. V'gam Sha'ul aviyodeya kena. My father Sha'ul knows it too.
Yeah, that's what I said last week, remember?
Okay.
That's probably
why. Mashaya Adlahem Shmuel Shalot Takuma Mamlacha LeShaul. And what directed them to this? How did they realize it's going to be David? Because Hashem already told Shaul, you're not keeping the throne. Which means Ralbag assumes Yehonatan knows about this. That Yehonatan knows what God said to Shaul. We've wondered about that before. You know? That's something we speculated about before. Does Yehonatan know? Remember, we talked about this when we saw how Yehonatan goes off and does his own thing and doesn't consult his father. And somebody suggested maybe he knows that his father isn't going to be king anymore. We weren't sure. I think Sandy, you might have been the one to suggest that. But that's, Ralbag believes that he's aware of this happening. So, the Brit is either, as Malbim frames it, a product of love, or as Ralbag sees it, it's pragmatic. David is gonna be king, I better be on his good side. Let me make a covenant with David. Okay. Yes, Janine.
If you want to be a little more generous, couldn't it just be acceptance of the fact that I won't be king and you will be, rather than being pragmatic, is to show acceptance?
You could. You could say that. I don't think that's what Ralbag thinks, but I think you could say it. So I wanted to show you one other thing here, which we've talked about. Now let's actually implement it. The language that's used in the text in sentence three, the language which is singular language, as opposed to later on where they make a covenant where it's plural. So Professor Keel in the Dat Mikra tries to explain why the language is singular and says here, it's number six, source number six, Brit koreit hagadol im hakatan. The greater executes a covenant with the lesser. Umavtiach lo chasut, promising him shelter. V'lachein mityacheset habrit kan liyahonatan. And that's why it says Yehonatan made the Brit with David. It's the more powerful party with the less powerful party. Like Susan Ackerman said about Ahava, that's the idea here. It's about the greater with the lesser. That's why it will be framed in this way. According to that, it could be a one-way Brit or it could be a two-way Brit. You could do it either way. But that's the suggestion. Okay. Yes, Jeanette.
This is the big thing from this bridge for me is that Yehonatan explicitly is taking a side. He's going to be the person to find out what his father is feeling and bring that information to David.
Right.
He's taking clear sides, and it's verbalized here. We knew it before. But it's verbalized.
Well, he hasn't yet said anything about his father.
No, just like as this continues.
Yeah.
Want to wait. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
As it continues, it will. But right now, he hasn't said anything, and we don't know. Shaul hasn't said anything either. He's going to, in a little bit, he will in Pasuk Tet, but not yet. Okay. So what's with the handover of the tunic and the handover of the weapons, the armor, the weapons, and all of that? What is this about? So on one level, hey, nice present. You beat Goliath. I'm really impressed. I like you. Let's make a covenant, and here are some gifts. But I think more than that, it's really a transfer of power. I think it's a transfer of power. And I say that for a few reasons. First, the Me'il. We've talked about the Me'il already a couple of times in Shmuel. First, though, before you ever get to Shmuel, back in the Chumash, who wears a Me'il?
Yosef.
Nope, that's a ketonet. Who wears a Me'il?
Actual Me'il.
Yep.
Shmuel.
Before you ever get to Shmuel, before you get to Nach. Sorry? No. 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 Kotnot or.
Kotnot or, sorry.
Nope.
Oh, Yehuda. Yehuda with the Tamar.
Nope.
Did he leave not Yosef?
One second. Yehuda with Tamar? No. Chotamcha uptilacha umatcha sherbiadecha. No meal.
Kohen?
Sorry. Ah, bingo. Shoshana says it.
Who?
Not just anyone, though. The Kohen Gadol. Me'il is one of the four garments that is only worn by the Kohen Gadol, which already tells you something about it, right? So Shmuel indeed has a Me'il. Where does Shmuel get his Me'il? Chana, right? Chana was the one, first of all, who dedicated Shmuel to God. She is the source of his power. She gave him a new Me'il every year. Shaul is the product of Shmuel, Shmuel's anointed king. And when Shmuel says to Shaul, you're done being king, the Me'il is torn. And there's a lot of discussion, which we had back in chapter 15, about whose Me'il is being torn and who is doing the tearing. But a Me'il is torn. The power is removed. And in fact, later on in this book, Shmuel is going to be called up from the grave to talk to Shaul, to give Shaul advice, and he is going to be wearing the Me'il. That's going to be mentioned explicitly in the text. And so I wonder whether David's Me'il is along the same lines. He gets the Me'il from Yehonatan, along with armor and weapons, and it seems to be a special royal garment. It seems to be a garment of power. Ricky, hang in there. We're going to see later in that horrible story of Amnon and Tamar that Tamar's Me'il will actually be torn in grief, and that's going to be part of the fall of David, because that's what leads to the whole thing with Avshalom and everything else there. There's more to be said about David and clothing and Me'il, but I hope you're getting the picture here that Me'il is something which conveys power, and I think that's what Yehonatan is trying to do here. I'm going to move to the armor and the weapons in a moment, but Ricky, you were going to say?
Yes, but where did Yehonatan get the Me'il? Is it a special Me'il? Is it,
I think it's the king's son's Me'il. No, I'm serious. That's what I think this is. I don't think this is, you know, off the rack at Walmart. I think this is, this is what the prince has. That's what it sounds like to me.
Well, we use now the expression to pass the mantle.
Good point.
Must come from here. Yeah.
Right. Etty's putting on her Me'il. The armor and the weapons are clearly special, right? Oh, it's only a few chapters ago that we learned, as I said before, that only Shaul and Yehonatan actually had these. So Abarbanel joins the Ralbag camp here. Take a look at source number 7, where Abarbanel comments on the gifts that Yehonatan gives to Shaul. He says, "Vizeh haya siman she David yehyeh ben hamelech v'yoresh malchuto acharav b'mekom Yehonatan." This is a sign that David will become the son of the king and inherit the kingdom after him, and not Yehonatan. The Malbim makes the same comment here as Abarbanel. By the way, the language of being the son of the king, of course, he's going to become the son-in-law of the king. But also Shaul is going to call him Bini. He's going to call him my son. I don't know that it's a reference to the marriage as much as it just is supposed to be what the relationship becomes. You know, some parent-child relationships don't work out as well. So that's what you see with David and Shaul. But what you're seeing here is Abarbanel and Malbim joining Ralbag and saying this is about the transfer of power. Not only that, but now I come to something that I mentioned last week or the week before when we first saw this word and people asked about it. If you look at the first word in sentence 4, Vayitpashet Yehonatan et Hame'il Asher Alav. Instead of saying Vayavshet or Vayivshot, as it will in chapter 19, sentence 24, when Shaul removes the garment, it says Vayitpashet. So says Radak in source number 8 on your sheet, Va'amar b'lashon hitpa'el. It used the hitpa'el form. Ki beretzon gadol uva'ahava rabba hitpashet begadav untanam lo. Because with great desire and great love, he removed his garments and gave them to David. This is something that energizes him. And now I come back to what Susan asked, and somebody else asked the question last week as well, which is, why does David accept? Right? Shaul took off the armor and all that and put it on David. David tried it on and said, nah, not for me. I don't have any experience with it. Whatever his excuse was, I don't want it. And we asked at the time why David rejected it. And we gave a variety of explanations, right? One suggestion was that he really had no experience with it. He's going to go out and fight. He's not comfortable with armor. Another explanation was he wanted to rely on God, although that was odd because he took weapons with him. Another explanation that we gave was that he saw the look on Shaul's face and realized Shaul was going to be jealous. We gave all these different explanations. But the bottom line was he rejected Shaul's. So how is it that he does this here? you know, that he accepts from Yehonatan. Jeanette wrote a message in the chat here asking, how does hitpashet, using the hitpael form, mean that he did it with love? So Radak is a far superior grammarian. He wrote the book, the Sefer Michlol, on it. He believes that the hitpael form shows an investment of energy in doing something. Real motivation. It's not so much love as strength of motivation. So Ricky is muted, but the gestures are appreciated. Ricky and then grander, Agnes.
It's a grander word.
Okay. It's a grander word. Yes. Agnes, you were gonna say?
Well, I mean, don't you say in modern Hebrew like Hitla based, you use the reflexive just to, you know, just ordinarily getting dressed.
Well, yes, but this is about removing it from himself. And we do have another word that's used in chapter 19, sentence 24, when Shaul removes a garment, it's going to say, Vayivshat. So that should have been the word here too. Eti.
I'm looking at it, Yavshit means take it off. It Vashet means to diversify yourself of it, like, yeah. take it away from yourself.
Yeah. Okay. But I want to go into this business of David accepting it, because I want to know what that's about. Susan and then Sandy.
Okay. This, I'm not always politically correct. Certain people I know have called me up. We were talking about what I was learning. And they said that this verse is used by the gay community to say that this proves homosexual.
Yeah. Yeah, people say all sorts of things. I'm going to go back to the data and theory issue here, okay?
Okay.
Because it was going to come up at some point. I expected it to come up later, because the place where it usually gets commented on is in David's eulogy for Yehonatan, where there are different ways to read the line, but one way to read what he says is, your love for me was greater than the love of women. One way to read that line is, the way that they would like to read it, that there's a greater love there than he feels for women. The problem with it, number one, is that it's completely unsupported in the text. We don't find anything that says they're doing anything. That's number one. And number two is that it will be inconsistent with Tanakh as a whole, because Tanakh as a whole doesn't present those relationships as positive. And I'm not saying this to condemn. I'm not using this as a platform to knock people. Like, that's its own discussion and its own shear in terms of homosexuality and the Torah's perspective on it. That's not the conversation right now. My point is only that I think it's wishful thinking when people read it into this passage. It's just not supported. Okay.
In the fact that somebody says that your love is greater than that love, it means that that love exists. You love women.
Also true, but we have to get to that pasuk, because there's a lot to be said about how the multiple ways to read it, and we're just not there yet, literally. Okay, I see Ricky. Sandy, sorry. I was waiting on Sandy before. Yeah, Sandy, go ahead.
I don't know how to express it, but with Shaul, he was trying to show his power, and that he's the one sending, it's his messenger to send David out by dressing him up. With Yonatan, it's a humbling. He's like, here, please, may I present my garments to you, my Lord, almost, you know? You are the one I'll follow. I love you unconditionally. But
good.
Please protect my children in the future. Don't kill my family, I think, also.
Yes.
Like, just in case there's a jealous, you know, I don't know what happened in those days, but.
Right. So Sandy is going. Yeah.
Sorry. So I also say, in terms of the whole homosexuality, they also both love women. It's true, and they also talk about having families in the future. So therefore, that's why it sort of works against that a little bit. But anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going there. I really am not. But in terms of your former point, if you take a look on the sheet at source number 9. I titled this point about David accepting one and not accepting the other as the same action, different meanings. Meaning, Shaul and Yehonatan both offer David their armor and weapons, but they mean different things when they do it. And Sandy has given us one way to read it, and I think a very solid way to read it, which is that Shaul is granting David you know, a gift from the power position. Whereas what Yehonatan is doing is more humble. I'm going to have a different way to take it, but I think that's certainly a viable way to read it. I see a few hands. So what I'm going to do is this. I want to go through this and give it a read, and then I'll come back to, I know I saw Etty wanted to say something, and I know that Ricky wants to, I know Ricky wants to say something, but she's also going to wait. Let me get through this one way first. If he rejected Shaul's armor because he feared Shaul's jealousy, then maybe the answer here is, here, he's not afraid that Yonatan will become jealous of him, and therefore he accepts it. But that, to me, only builds up the problem, because he should be afraid that Shaul is going to be angry that Yehonatan has handed over royal armor to David. So I don't take that approach. It could be the answer is, he is so moved by Yehonatan's gesture that he just can't say no. He has to accept. But I'm going to offer you the following. Regarding Shaul, we floated the idea that he might be offering the armor because he feels that David is doing the job that he was supposed to do, right? Goliath, remember, had taunted the Ish, and that Ish is Shaul. He said, you know, isn't the Ish going to come out and fight me? And David takes up the mantle, literally, on behalf of Shaul. He rejects the mantle, but he takes the job on behalf of Shaul. And we suggested that maybe Shaul is offering the armor because David is going in his place. In which case, David might reject it in order to spare Shaul's feelings, like that Midrash Tanchuma that said that there was an issue of jealousy, as well as to say, David is saying to Shaul, God wants me to do this. I'm not doing this in your place. God wants me to be the one to actually carry it out. I do this under my own name. On the other hand, now, if we take the view of Ralbag, Abarbanel, Malbim, that Yehonatan is offering the armor as a statement that David will be king, David accepts that. Because he knows he's king. He's been anointed by Shmuel. This is actually appropriate. And it's Yehonatan's to give. Because Yehonatan was the heir to the throne. There were other sons of Shaul, but Yehonatan from the very beginning was presented as the heir. He's the one with the weapons. He's the one with the army at his back. So Yehonatan is the right one to hand it to David. So what I'm getting at is this. Shaul gives David the armor out of a sense of, you're taking my place. You should have my armor. And David says, I'm not taking your place. This is my job. God wants me to do it. However, Yehonatan offers David the armor saying, you're taking my place. You're going to be king. And that David accepts because it's true. He is going to be taking Yehonatan's place. So that's my suggestion about what this is. Someone sent me a message in the chat saying maybe it's a sign that David is under Yehonatan's protection. Right? It's a sign of the Brit. It's an interesting idea for sure. Although it's hard to protect people if you don't have your armor and your weapons anymore. I'm not so sure that that's a good plan. He may not have thought ahead on that one. Actually, he doesn't have more. Right? Remember, we saw. I mean, maybe by now they do. I don't know. The Plishtim are no longer in control, so it could be that. It could be true. Okay.
I'm
not serious about that.
There's so many things.
Yes. There were a couple of questions and comments, but I still have to get to Pasuk Hey, so I'm not going to take everything. But, Etty, you were going to say?
I read things very simplistic. Don't go too deep. Shaul is offering his armor because David is brave and he's going to fight the giant.
Okay.
And says, okay, so to help you fight, here is my armor. Yonatan gives David, he says, I love you, and here is my clothes to show you my love for you. That's how I see.
Okay, and why does David, accept the latter and not the former?
Because the former, he says, I don't really need it, I'm going to do it. The second one, he is accepting Yonatan's love,
I hear you. Leona and then Claudette. Leona, you're muted.
Okay, I'm unmuted.
Yeah.
I can see something here that it's the juxtaposition of the psukim. For example, in the previous one, he vayichrot Yonatan v'David, he makes the covenant with him.
Yeah.
And then the sign and the symbol of the covenant, perhaps, is the taking off of his armor and everything and handing it to him. It's part of, like, the ceremony, if there is a kind of unofficial ceremony that goes together with this. And that could be a reason that David accepts it, because he's accepted the covenant.
So you think this is just ceremonial and David doesn't walk away with it?
Yeah, I do.
It's an interesting idea. I would want to see something supporting that in the text, because it says he gave it to him. It sounds like he gave it to him. But it's an interesting idea, for sure.
But it just comes after that sentence with the...
Yeah. No, I think the tie to the covenant is very real. I think the idea that it's a ceremony and that David doesn't keep it, I'd like to see more evidence for in the text. But I agree with you on the connection to the covenant, that there's something there. Claudette.
I think that Jonathan was making a statement not only to David, but to his father. Because in this it says, and Shaul took David into the home after all this.
Yeah.
So I think he was saying to his father, I know that this is what we should be doing.
Interesting. That takes guts. Although Yehonatan has guts. I mean, that we know. It's an interesting idea for sure.
He did it in front of his father.
Yeah, no, and the truth of the matter is that we're going to see in the next chapter that Yehonatan argues with his father on behalf of David. So it's not beyond the pale to think that he's already sending a message. And my only real problem, I guess, would be that Shaul has not expressed hostility to David yet. There's nothing for him to argue against at this point. That's not coming until sentence 9.
This is the beginning of him starting to...
But it hasn't happened yet. So, I don't know. I want to show you something in sentence 5. We only have a few minutes left. The last sentence in this section. Vayetze David bechol asher yishlachenu Shaul yaskil. So David goes out, and wherever Shaul sends him, he's great. Yaskil, he's brilliant. He has insight. It means he has success. Vayisimeyu Shaul al anshei ha-milchama. Shaul puts him over all the warriors. Vayitav be'enei chol ha'am v'gam be'enei avdei Shaul. Everybody loves David. He's good in their eyes. He's good even in the eyes of Shaul's avadim. The commentators here note that this means David has been elevated over all those loyal people who worked for Shaul, and yet they're not jealous of his rise. That's the idea. And Radak says that, Abarbanel says that, others do. This highlights, this passage in general, this verse in general, it highlights, after the transfer of power, the success that David has. If you take a look at source number 10, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, it's also a Gemara in Erevin. This is something that we saw back in chapter 14. Chapter 14, sentence 47, after the defeat of the Plishtim of the Philistines, told us about Shaul, Bechol asher yifneh, Yarshia. Wherever he turned, Yarshia. So my Hebrew speakers, what does the word Yarshia mean? Yud, Rei, Shin, Yud, Ayin.
Does it come from wealth?
No. So it comes from the word Rasha. So, right. So in context, literally, and you can go back to your notes on chapter 14 for more about this, but in context, Yarshia is usually understood literally to be a positive thing about Shaul, that he would destroy the enemy. Wherever he turned in battle, he destroyed the enemy. But that's not the way the Gemara reads it. The Gemara reads it, I see you, Susan. The Gemara reads it as wherever Shaul turned, he performed wickedness. It did not work out for Shaul. So take a look at source number 10. This passage is talking about the praises of David when in chapter 16, they say that Shaul should take David as his musician. So Bechulhu, with each praise that is stated about David, Amar Lehu Yehonatan Beni Kamohu. He said, my son Yehonatan's just as good. All those nice things you have to say about David, Yehonatan has them too. Remember this Gemara, it's about Doeg praising David and all of that. Kevan de Amar Le Vahashem Imo. But when David was praised with the words, God is with him, Milsa dibidide nami lo havabe, something which he didn't have himself. Meaning, Shaul doesn't have God with him, because he's lost that. Chalash daite v'iknia be. At that point, he gets very upset. And at that point, he becomes jealous of David. Although he doesn't display it yet. Dibishaul ksiv uvecholasher yifne yarshia. Because for David, it says, for Shaul, it says, wherever he turned, yarshia, and they're taking it as things go wrong, things are bad. Ubedavid ksiv uvecholasher yifne yatzliach. And for David, it says, wherever he turned, he was successful. I added the word seek there, the Latin, afterwards, because that's actually not a pasuk. We do not have a pasuk uvecholasher yifne yatzliach. It seems to be a blending of the pasuk that we have here, uvechol asher yifne yaskil, uvechol asher yishlachenu shaul yaskil, that wherever he turns, he is maskil, and a pasuk in Tehillim. But the point is, and the reason why I mention it is, that we're highlighting David's success and Shaul's lack of success. And that comes along with the transfer of power from Yehonatan and the family of Shaul over to David. Now, the one thing I wanted to note, and I'll take your question, Susan. I think Chana also had something. Nope, just Susan. Okay. Is that this bond and the transfer of power is going to play out in the ensuing chapters. So in chapter 19, Yehonatan is going to warn David that his father wants to kill him, and he's going to convince his father to swear not to kill David. Then in chapter 20, we will find David on the run. And Yehonatan is the one who's going to try to determine whether David is safe with Shaul or not. That's Laftorah Machar Chodesh for Shabbos, that is Erev Rosh Chodesh. Then in chapter 23, David is still on the run. And Yehonatan makes that second pact with David that we read about to support him. And that's where he says, I'm going to be your second in command when you become king. And then finally, in chapter 31, the last chapter in this book, Yehonatan falls in the war with the Plishtim, and then in the next chapter, the first one in Shmuel Bet, David gives his dramatic emotional eulogy. So this relationship of David and Yehonatan that we've started on is going to be something that's going to carry us much further along in the book. Yes, Susan?
I'm taking the Gambeine of Dei Shaul in a different way. I'm taking it, I look at what's going on today, and I think this is telling us that there comes a point, just like what was going on with the insurrection and all that.
Okay, Susan, do me a favor.
No, I'm not saying that.
You could be saying something great.
No, I'm not talking about it. What I'm saying is it says that the people knew it was time to support David. It came a time where, yes, they supported Shaul, they were out day Shaul, but they saw there comes a time where, okay, Shaul doesn't have it, and even though we're supporters of Shaul, we are now supporters of David.
So I'm just going to leave that alone.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much, everyone. And
Thank you.
Have a good Shabbos.
Everybody stay healthy. Hope we get that money.